The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
It's gone to the short side. Oh, it's not gone to the short side. It's gone to the try line. Antonin Murray.
I don't think we met before, but I'm the referee on this field, not you.
Hi, Rob. Zeeb's here. Just want to discuss the captaincy next.
He's calling.
When Ring Rose comes through. Oh. That is brilliant from Ring Rose. Ring Rose is going here. What a score.
Welcome to the Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. I'm very happy to be joined in studio by the ever-present Pat McCarry.
Ever-present. Hey, how are you?
And we're delighted to be joined in studio by former Irish internationals Mike McCarthy.
Oh, thanks. It's nice to be back, lads. Yeah, it's been
good.
A while.
It's and, good to have you, Mike.
Again, I'm very sorry I was late this morning.
Okay. Mike was a little late.
Yeah.
A little conscious of this. It's okay, though. Yeah. So we're an understanding parish here. And Tomás O'Leary, how are you?
Yeah, I'm fantastic. It's a pleasure to be here.
Early. He was here early.
I was here on time, but Mike was late. So
yeah. Pat's not letting this go. It's a bit quiet in the rugby front.
Nothing
really going on this weekend. But if there's Ulster Bank League games going on. So in 1A, there's 4 games in Dublin, 1 in Doherdyle. Get yourself down to your local tide. But the Six Nations is just around the corner. So we've plenty to keep us going as we look to Ireland's chances. Mike is enthusiastic about Ireland's chances.
Very excited.
First things first, though. I'm excited about what Tomás is getting up to.
Yeah, obviously.
How's things? You're looking trim.
I put on a lot of weight once I retired from rugby. 4 or 5 months in the south of France with no rugby, no training, just eating and drinking. I put on about 12 kgs. I nearly hit the 100 kg mark.
A lot of cheese and rosé, yeah.
Had a serious word of myself, and once I came home to Ireland, started training again. But yeah, obviously I'm doing a bit of dancing at the moment, so it's a good crack.
Yeah,
I'm starting to learn about foxtrots and
yeah, we're not leaving that sit there now. Come on, give us the full spiel. How many hours a day is this?
I'm doing probably about 4 hours actual training, dance technique, all that crack during the day. Yeah. Learning about the characteristics and requirements of each dance. So I'm an expert on the foxtrot and the jive already, and I'm doing a paso doble this weekend. So yeah. It's good crack.
Is that 4 hours a day?
Yeah. The slow dances are okay, but the jive was tough. Now physically, I was seriously struggling. It was like after I danced on Sunday and on Monday, it was like I played a rugby game.
Serious?
Yeah. So I'm just about recovered from that now, but thankfully the paso is a bit slower and a bit more about character. I have to act a little bit too, which is difficult.
So you were saying that some of them are leaving it, like some of them are doing 9 and 10 hour days, aren't they?
Like the Rob Heffernan, I suppose that's his characteristics are coming out. Guess he was part of, you know, he was a walker, so you can imagine the hours he put down on the road, like pretty boring, pretty monotonous. So
are you saying he practices really slowly, so it just takes him 9 hours?
No, he's trying to bring out all the fast twitch fibres in his body now after years of suppressing them. But he's just determined to, I suppose, get the best out of each dance or whatever, whereas I'm probably a bit more relaxed and can see the wood from the trees a bit more, you know what I mean? I'm just going to enjoy the process and not take it seriously. I had enough of taking sport too seriously for 12, 14 years.
But you're going back playing local guy club, bit of football?
Yeah, like I said, I got back end of August from France, and I was obviously in terrible nick. And it's mainly a hurling team. Their senior hurling team got beaten in the quarterfinal, and they were literally playing the quarterfinal of the hurling on a Saturday, and they were out playing junior football county championship on the Monday night after that. So I'd been having a few pints for a few days down in West Cork on the Sunday night and probably Saturday and Friday night as well, and got a text off one of the lads when I was on the way back up to Cork on the Monday saying they were short a few numbers, would I fall in? So they said they wouldn't bring me on unless they were really stuck. And so I went on the bench, got on for the last 5 minutes. And then we got to the quarterfinal, came on last 5 minutes, did all right, and then ended up coming on the semi-final. That went to replay, started the replay, and then started the final. But we lost the county final, unfortunately. But great crack.
Ah, decent run.
Yeah, and it's good to get. Like, there was probably 2 or 3 lads my age who were still playing, who I would have played with since I was a kid. So it's good to get back and play with them again. And hopefully now, it's my intention to go back hurling this year, but obviously last time I played hurling was 19, so I have a lot of work to do to get the skill set back.
So it's
that.
From 19 to what, 34 years young, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. So
still in there?
I'd like to think so, but unfortunately rugby's taken its toll on my body and I'm not the
dancing by the sound of it.
Exactly. So that might help my feet to be able to move a bit quicker, but when I played hurling, obviously I was a young fella and I was really quick back then, and obviously I was a very good hurler because I played hurling every day since I was 2 years of age. Whereas now I haven't booked a hurley any 5 or 6 times in the last 14-15 years.
But so. You were coming from a decent base. What were you, captain of the Cork Miners?
Yeah, that was 2001.
Yeah.
So that was the last time Cork won a minor title, which is an indictment of Cork underage hurling anyway. But obviously it was my kind of passion growing up. It was a sport I was best at growing up. Yeah. And it's something I'd like to do. It's like kind of a passion of mine, so I'd love to get back and see how it goes, you know. So
excellent.
Yeah.
Do you have any other sports growing up? Rugby all the way.
So I was a good swimmer, good at athletics. I wouldn't mind giving the dancing a chance, but I heard Mike Ross was in with a shout for the dancing.
Probably not. I don't know. Well, maybe. I think he'd be good at the slow dances, alright, to be fair to him.
Yeah, but no. Tried lots of different sports when I was growing up. So, but I was a pretty good swimmer. So, but rugby actually came quite late to me.
Yeah.
So yeah.
How late?
Well, actually, I wasn't particularly good at school. I was pretty overweight and was a bit of a ruck inspector. So I'd have maybe one good carry at the start of the game, and then I just start turning up to the rucks as the nine was passing the ball. So yeah, I didn't have too much of an effect. So.
Who was the best ruck inspector you played with now when you were a nine? You're retired now, you can name names.
I don't know, I suppose you're not really, you're just focused on trying to get to each ruck. What I found is there was actually the opposite way. Sometimes once stats came in, there was lads trying to hit rucks needlessly just to get their number of impacts up, and lads started playing by stats almost. So that's what pissed me off more than a ruck inspector, if a fella went to a ruck needlessly just to get his stat that he hit 15 rocks.
So you're there arriving to the base, the ball is clean, it's grand, and another body comes in.
Yeah. So that's what I hated stats, and I hated people playing by stats. And even after games now, you see, you know, the number 8 had 15 carries.
Yeah.
And then you look at it and they're like, oh, he had an amazing game, or he made 17 tackles, and he might have carried for maybe average of 1.5 meters per carry. Like that's not exactly too effective. Yet. Fella who might have had 7 carries might have made 4 or 5 meters per carry, and that's a lot more effective, but he won't get the platitudes or whatever because he hadn't a massive number of carries. So I think stats can be misleading, and I think it's dangerous for coaches to especially review and preview games. Like coaches, some of them got a bit over obsessed with stats and stuff, and I think if you play by stats, you take away from your natural game, or you take away from I suppose making a correct decision. Like the fellow out in the touchline might be spreading the defence, yet he might not touch the ball for 5 minutes. But it might create space for some fellow to make an inside break, and he'll obviously get no credit. Whereas if he was in trying to get a carry or trying to get a hit a ruck, then the space isn't going to be there for a line break. So I've no problem with ruck inspectors. I have a problem with fellas who are chasing stats.
It's that fear of the sheet going up in camp and everyone running over to have a look at the sheet. And you know, as you're saying there, it's you know, you might carry instead of give a pass just to get an extra start of a carry. So yeah, I totally agree with what you're saying there.
Well, there was a story for a couple of years back about a senior Scottish international who was dropped for that reason. He was building up numbers, and that wasn't supposed to be his job. But that's one for another day.
Well, it's you've got 3-on-2 and you don't give the pass so you can carry, and you bomb the try but you get an extra carry.
Yeah.
And then you're like, oh great,
and you're up on the sheet.
I've had a load of carries.
Yeah, exactly.
Well, let's hope that the test level coaches can see through that.
Oh, I think they do. They probably know a bit more about it than me anyway, but that's just a bugbear of mine.
Right, Champions Cup, lads. That wasn't a bad old weekend.
That was good, wasn't it? Yeah.
As long as you're not from Ulster.
Yeah, but that was a shame for them, wasn't it? Well, they never even looked in the mix today. Was unfortunate for them, but brilliant to see the other sides go through, and then Connacht as well getting through as well, and getting the home quarter final. So yeah, 3 home quarter finals, and Leinster very impressive again, and Munster they're looking good now. It's funny when you go into the Six Nations off the top of good form, how you kind of get excited for it then, like, and well, we'll see where we are in a few weeks, but excited right now. Looks good, and looking forward to those. All four of those quarterfinals are brilliant.
It is going to be good, and as you say, you get very excited now, but we've got a whole Six Nations to get through, so it's Easter weekend, which is months away, literally, until these quarterfinals can take place. But yeah, we're looking at Leinster Saracens, Scarlets, La Rochelle, Clermont Racing, and Munster against Toulon. That's not a bad slate, Tomás.
No, it looks pretty exciting, and obviously from the Irish point of view, Leinster are obviously playing some unbelievable rugby, and Munster look very astute, and they know what they're doing. From a Leinster point of view, like you said, it's the worrying thing is that they're playing such good rugby now, that and there's such a long break between now and the quarterfinals. And I think obviously, while it's a massive strength, they've got an unbelievable squad. Like, picking your best team has gone very, very hard for them, whereas Munster are a lot more settled in terms of their starting 15 and their 23. So, I'd hate to be Leo Cullen trying to pick a back three, or, you know, picking your centres or whatever. Like,
I'd love to be Leo Cullen picking it from those players.
And see, they've just signed up Jordan Lamour on a pro contract.
Yeah, he's up.
Has he earned that?
He's got the big boy contract.
Yeah. But like, obviously Leinster are flying it out, but you know, come quarterfinals, you know, you're going to be leaving out three or four unbelievable international wings out of even a match day squad. So it's trying to keep that squad happy, whereas I think Munster will be a lot more settled, and well, I know they're not playing as exciting a brand of rugby, but I think they'll be happy where they are too.
It's a strange challenge to have, isn't it? Like, just to, you see that often, you see in the stands the kind of players that Leinster have, but like, I think when you were there, Mike, even as well, like, just top quality internationals that know they have to sit out is a tough problem to have, like, but it is one. Yeah.
Well, it's a great problem for a coach, but I was watching that Glasgow game a couple of weeks ago, and it was Jack McGrath starting, and then on 50 minutes you bring on Kian Healy. Yeah. So, I mean, it's pretty frightening, and then you've got the likes. It's just a strength and depth all over. I mean, and then you've got Porter, Tadhg Furlong, and it's the same case in every position. The last few years when I was there, the strongest position was the back row, but then you look now, everywhere, second row, front row, the back line, there's just so much competition, it's crazy. And you touched on Ulster there, so you know, I just felt that was really disappointing for them, because they put in such a good performance against La Rochelle at home, and they're in with a shout for the quarter final. So I suppose what it gives them now is the opportunity to concentrate on the league, which can't be a bad thing. But then losing, you know, the signing of Stephen Donald, so that's a bit of a loss for them. With
not a good few days if you're an Ulster fan. Short and medium term, you're a bit down.
It's been up and down from every week. It's like they're either getting slammed, or else it's like, this could be it. This could be the start of something. But they struggling to perform or results together, I suppose, as well. And then they can't, like, you'd like to see someone like Johnny McPhillips get a game now, or some of the other younger lads like Rob Little as well. But they still need to kind of qualify for Europe next season as well.
Just
on that fly half thing, because I think it was being talked about in the media about Cathal Marsh at Leinster, fourth choice, but he's a phenomenal player, and you know, it'd be great for him to get some rugby at that level, and he's not getting any rugby at the moment.
This guy right here, and for those who can't see, I'm pointing at myself. Marsh is an ideal candidate to go up there. He needs game time, and everyone else is fit. He's not going to be in the mix right now, with the greatest of respect to him. He's an ideal candidate to go north, but we will see.
We see Jordy Murphy's obviously going up there as well. So
He can share the car.
Exactly.
But stepping back a little bit, you see, you've got two Irish teams in those quarterfinals, and everyone's quite happy. And okay, Ulster got to the last day; they should have done better, but they were still in the mix. Connacht have done well and getting up there in their home quarterfinal in the Challenge Cup.
Gloucester, isn't it?
It is Gloucester, isn't it?
Yeah,
I hope so.
I hope
Mike's sake and everybody else's sake.
Yeah. It's Gloucester, lads. Yeah, that
could be some homework not done here in the studio. The French clubs have done fine. English clubs not so good. Wales very happy with Scarlets, and Ospreys were in on the final day. Scotland fairly happy in terms of Glasgow's performance, doing a real number on Exeter, fair play to them. But the English clubs have not done well in this round. Do we read into that as we go into the Six Nations, or are these two separate conversations?
I think it's a separate conversation. English rugby, like, I suppose I played in the league for 3 years, and it's a tough league, but I think the skill set and the analysis done by the Irish teams and the Welsh teams and in our native league here, I think it's far superior. And then even going to France for a year, you get an insight into the lack of preparation that teams have over there for games. It's mental, really, when you think of the budgets they have and the investment in players. They don't mirror that with investment in medical staff. They don't mirror that in terms of preparation with video analysts and all that kind of stuff. So I think the Irish teams, that's why I suppose the Irish international team has done so well, why Munster and Leinster have done so well in Europe, is because they actually prepare and they analyse teams in opposition, and they, I suppose, they exploit teams where they're weak. And obviously then as well, the investment that players actually have in their province, like, people want to grow up wanting to play for Leinster, Munster, Ulster, Connacht. And there's an affinity with the fans and a genuine investment in the area. So I think you can't underestimate all that. But yeah, I think the English teams, club teams, are right. There's probably been a lot of average foreign signings by a lot of them. But I still think the English international team will be strong. I know they're kind of riddled by injury at the moment, but you still go through their team and they're going to be pretty strong if they can maintain, I suppose, fitness levels for the remainder of the squad. But I think it's a very good opportunity for Ireland to win a Six Nations.
So let's run through the Ireland's fixture list, so just so people get this in their heads. So we're starting 2 weekends time, France away, then Italy at home, then a week's break, Wales at home, then a week's break, Scotland at home, then we finish Paddy's Day away to England. You both played in a Paddy's Day fixture in Twickenham, I think.
Yeah, I think so. I don't know, I wasn't really too cognizant of the fact that it was Paddy's Day if I was playing against England. Yeah, I've been over there and won and been over there and lost, so...
I've been over there and lost.
I'd heard about that game that Stuart Lancaster, he was the England coach at the time, and he had ramped up the English players going out for that game, got in like a kind of Gulf War veteran the day before to give a big speech about what it was to be English and stuff like that, and they're all hyped up beyond belief. And then Declan Kidney's speech to the Irish team in the dressing room just was something along the lines of, like, we're not losing on Paddy's Day, lads. And that was about it. It wasn't the most rousing of speeches at all, and maybe that then reflected on the pitch. Do you remember anything of that?
I'm seeing blank faces here, lads.
I don't know. I wasn't probably there. I don't know. I certainly don't remember it if I was.
Were you having a smoke at the back?
No. I don't know. Was I playing? I don't know. I don't remember.
Have you guys just blanked the whole game out of your collective memory?
I don't think I've played at Twickenham, so...
It's a bad one. McGeady needs to check his records.
I probably have blanked it out of my memory. Like, it's certainly not at the forefront anyway.
Well, it's scary how quickly the wheels can fall off, because if this is the game you're referring to, I remember, I think Rossi went off in the scrum pretty early.
The game.
Yeah, I remember that game now, yeah.
Yeah, we got hammering, absolutely hammering.
It wasn't one of my better days either.
Tom Cord came in and life was not pleasant for Mr. Cord.
To be fair to Tom, he was playing on the side that he doesn't normally play on, and you know, certainly wasn't just him. And it's just scary how quickly the wheels can fall off, because I think we were in with a shout, and then the last 20 minutes I think we conceded a good number of tries. So
it's a load of penalties, and Owen Farrell, who I think was about 12, kicked a load of penalties, and Ireland went home. But going back to the injuries point, so there's been a lot of fuss being made, particularly from the England side, about they've got whatever 18 players injured. Joe Schmidt, I think, has also said 13. Something about 13.
Yeah, he dropped. He said 13 yesterday as well, because Eddie Jones is already starting Ireland, their favourite, to mind game. So Schmidt said we have 13. So I've scribbled them out here now in front of me, and so I've got Heaslip, Payne, Rhys Ruddock, Niall Scannell, who Tomás said came back for Munster last weekend, James Tracy, Gary Ringrose, Sean O'Brien, Tommy O'Donnell, Dave Kilcoyne, Tommy Bowe, Finlay Beelam, Craig Gilroy, and then I'm thinking the 13th man might be Blaendahl, even though he hasn't played for Ireland yet.
So you're stretching to get to a full 13 of...
Yeah, like, there might be guys who've got a cap for Ireland, maybe, but they're not. A lot of them aren't what you're not called frontline guys. Like, Craig Gilroy's probably delighted to hear himself mentioned as a guy who's still in Schmidt's considerations, considering that whenever he's fit, he doesn't seem to get a chance. Like, so, 13, but 13 is a bit of a stretch compared to what England are doing.
I think Joe must be going a bit soft on them, because I think that they're in Spain this week, aren't they?
They're in Spain.
Keep seeing Instagram stories of them sunbathing on the beach. And
it's a big secret club trip to Spain. Yeah. Wasn't really on the schedule, was it?
Not
when the media was concerned.
No. And like, yeah, sure, let him go off and do whatever he wants. Like, let him just chill out for a bit. But there's something that wasn't really flagged in advance, like that had happened. Like, and I would have happily went over there and covered a couple of days of the camp. And
selfless, Pat.
Yeah. If they want to give us a heads up next year, I'll go over and kind of cover that warm weather camp. Yeah.
But Ireland are lucky enough. So if you look at sort of England, have some frontline players. That, yes, they have the greatest depth of any team. But and Conor O'Shea said he bled for the depth problems.
Brilliant. That was a brilliant clip, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah. Very good. Very well played, Conor. But Wales have lost Dan Biggar. They've no Warburton.
Liam Williams as well.
Yeah. He could be up the entire thing.
Priestland
gone as well.
Faletau, Jonathan Davies.
Yeah, Davies are definitely gone. Yeah. It's not like that is not good for Wales. So Wales are now fourth favourites for the championship, along with France. Ireland are second favourites. England are favourites. Scotland are third favourites. Mm. They're also second favourites to get the wooden spoon. So, because that's Scotland. But what do we want to see from Ireland from this championship? Is it, do we need to win the Six Nations, or is the Rugby World Cup next year the goal?
You chat to any of the players and they want to win a Six Nations and they probably want to win a Grand Slam.
Okay.
Especially the guys there, and I suppose the guys who are maybe with less caps or trying to establish themselves internationally just want to feature and just want to put their hand up for I suppose down the road for a World Cup. But I think there's such a good opportunity, you know, with the litany of injuries that all the other squads have, to get a good start away in France and then target an actual Grand Slam. Because I know, well, Joe Schmidt as well, he obviously would have that on his radar because he hasn't done that yet. So I think it's a great opportunity for a Grand Slam, and I think that's the forefront of their minds.
And I think he said that after the Autumn Internationals, you know, he tested a few players out, and he's kind of said he's concentrating on the Six Nations and won't really be given that many opportunities to new guys. So he's earmarked it as, you know, concentrating on it. They want to win it, clearly.
What do we think? Do we believe that? Joe Schmidt can say a lot of things. Is that the message he really believes, or what do you reckon, Pat?
Yeah, well, he is. Like, he clearly is building towards the World Cup by giving out so many caps and getting in young lads, even Larmour, like, showing no fear or getting them in. So he is building towards the World Cup. But I think you can't go into the World Cup without not winning a Six Nations in 4 years as well. Like, you want to build up a winning mentality in your team, and this team, like, Schmidt would be delighted. I think he's targeting one. If you can get one out of the next two, like, you get these lads that, you know, you can get over the line when you need to. So, and the World Cup is such a, you know, anything can happen in a World Cup as well. I know Schmidt, he'd be demented to win that thing as well. Like, he wants to go and get Ireland as far as he can, but Six Nations is something that they can achieve, so why not go out and do it as well?
So injuries okay. We are in a good chance here.
Yeah, we're not too, like, I actually think I did something boasting about how great we were for missing injuries mid-January, and then
I
jinxed around four or five players.
Yeah, you're jinxing the entire squad, aren't you?
Yeah, Ring Rose not answering my calls now after that. But I think we're in good shape. If you look at the team we have, it's a pretty settled team. Again, you can pretty much pick who you want. The only ones would be Sean O'Brien. It definitely would have been open side, and then the man who probably would have come in would have been Rhys Ruddock, who was having a great season until he got injured. So my big question then is who starts open side, I suppose. That's one of the big ones. And then maybe who else? Maybe Keith Earls is in good form, but wing and open side were two big ones.
So who are your candidates for the open side position?
Well, the two main ones I think would be Josh van der Fleer or Dan Levy, and then Jordy Murphy's come in and done a job for Joe in the past, so I think he might come in. But I'd go Josh, and then he's been getting starts for Leinster in the last few games, so I think he's my man.
Yeah, I think Jordy kind of went off the radar a bit after that injury he got against the All Blacks, but now he's come back and he's performing, and you know, he'll certainly have some credits from Joe from that performance in Chicago. So I'd expect to see Jordy there probably, but I mean, that's a strength and depth. They're three absolute quality guys that offer maybe slightly different things. So for a particular game, so be interesting to see. And but I think the player welfare system's obviously clearly working well for international rugby. When, you know, a long season, there's been a Lions tour. That's why so many of the English players are you know, aren't available. So whereas our guys are getting rested, their minutes are being looked at. They're not overplaying. So I think that's definitely a massive plus for us going forward, having so many guys available.
It does. The finger does get pointed at the lack of relegation and pressures like that in the Pro 14. Your old club was in the news there during the week, Tomás. London Irish refusing to sell their Premiership share.
It definitely helps in terms of player development that there's no relegation.
Mm.
Whereas in England, you know, the bottom three or four clubs are very cognizant of the fact that if they get relegated, obviously there's a massive strain on finance, massive strain on, I suppose, attracting fans to the ground, maintaining their playing base. And London Irish have obviously struggled the last few years going down and coming back up. And it looks like they're going to be relegated again. So, it is a difficult one, and they had big intentions of moving to Brentford Football Club, building a new stadium with them. I think that's still going ahead, but if they're in a championship, attracting the right players, investing in that, and investing in a new stadium is going to be very difficult for the club. Like, I think it was obviously weird going from Munster, a club who had a massive identity, and going to London Irish then, who's an Irish club playing in Reading, no atmosphere at the games. Like, the only time I was ever in Reading was driving out the motorway into the ground, straight off the motorway, and then back home. I was in, I think, Reading actual town once in my 3 years there. So it's a strange place. Like, and obviously the club has, the last 3-4 years have been very tough for the club, but I don't know what the logistics and the business consequences are for maintaining their Premiership share if they're not in the Premiership. I don't know how that works. I don't know.
Yeah, I think they're generally only interested in the Championship clubs when Bristol are down there, because
yeah,
they
exactly
want them back up.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah.
That's probably one for another day. And one who won't, we'll move on, right? There's one man who's just come into the news this week, who's been in the news for 17 years, but he won't be in the news for an 18th, John Muldoon.
Mm.
So John Muldoon is hanging up the boots at the end of the year. Mike, you know John pretty well, yeah?
Yeah, to be honest, it was a bit of a surprise, because I don't think his body's been struggling, as far as I was aware. I don't think his body had been struggling too badly, so I know he's getting old now, so... But I thought he's even older than you,
is he?
I think he's 37 now. So, I thought he might play another year or two. But, he is Connacht rugby, isn't he? He's a great guy, you know, both, you know, off the pitch, and then what he delivers week in, week out on the pitch for the last 17 years is phenomenal. He's a great leader. The lads really get behind him. He's the kind of guy you'd want in the trenches with you when the chips are down. And surely a coaching role with Connacht beckons going forward.
Yeah, I think he's only 35. I'm sure he was on the...
he's 34, actually. But
yeah, well, I think he was on the Galway minor hurling squad in 2000. They beat us that year.
Oh, wow.
And obviously we beat him back in 2001 then. But yeah, he's only 35 max. but yeah, like, an unbelievable career for... I guess you said he's Mr. Connacht, like, mm-hmm. He's an iconic figure for there. Like, and I suppose obviously the last few years have been exciting for Connacht, and, you know, culminating in winning the Pro 12 a couple of years ago. But, you know, I suppose the tough years, the barren years, I suppose, that he stuck around, maybe when he had an opportunity to go to the UK, or I don't know, if he had have an opportunity to go to another Irish province. I don't know whether that came up for him, but to stay in Connacht when things maybe weren't so exciting, and it speaks volumes of his passion and his love for Connacht, like, so. And I guess he'll be missed there, but certainly leaving the jersey in a better place.
Nice way for him to go out if they win, because they've got a chance of winning this Challenge Cup now with a home quarter against Gloucester. So
definitely
a bit of a fairy tale ending for him. And, you know, have you seen the West is Awake film? There's a could always be a movie star after, so three stars in that. So
yeah, so happy trails, John Muldoon. I might try and get him in before he retires for the end of the season.
Can I come in on that one as well?
Can Mike come in? I think we'll let that happen. Right, up next, the lads will be back in to answer some of your fan questions.
The Hard Yards, brought to you by Sports Joe.
Action.
You're listening to The Hard Yards with Mike McCarthy and Tomás O'Leary and Pat and me.
Someone told me a good joke the other day.
Yeah, what?
Knock, knock.
Who's there?
Devin.
Devin who?
Devin Toner!
This is Mike McCarthy time on your local. In your headphones.
It's a great one.
As usual.
I just made it up on the drive in this morning.
That's a good joke.
Yeah.
That was a long drive as well. See, we're not letting it go.
Donnybrook, the traffic was... I'm sorry I was late again. Apologies. I'm sorry I was late.
This is a really highbrow podcast, isn't it?
It is. Yeah. Oh, very. We put a call out this week again, and these are some of the best questions we received. Make sure to use the hashtag AskTHY if you want to ask a question next week. So first one in, very topical, from Thomas Moroney. What kind of role do you think Tadhg Byrne will fill for Munster when he arrives? So Tadhg Byrne, he's on the long list for European Player of the Year, which is kind of weird because they only do it from six games, really.
Yeah, strange.
But well deserved, because this is something that's been building for a while. Tadhg Byrne, what do you see when you look at Tadhg Byrne, Mike?
I'm just really pleased to see how well he's doing. He was at Leinster when I was first there, and thankfully he hadn't peaked by then. Otherwise, I might have not had as many games. But yeah, he's gone to he hasn't given up. He wasn't getting any game time at Leinster. He went to Scarlets, and he's done fantastic. He's bulked up a bit, which I think he needed to do. And yeah, you saw that try he scored against Bath recently when he stepped inside Watson. He's got great feet. He's got an unbelievable engine on him. He just goes non-stop all day. He's pretty tough, and he's played a hell of a lot of rugby this season with Jake Bull and Rawlinson being out. So he's getting loads of good experience. He performed really well. I think Joe actually said it the other day. He played really well against Toulon in the two games. Played really well against Bath there. It's great to see him doing so well, and it's a great signing for Munster.
Looking forward to him arriving in.
Absolutely. You can see obviously the style of rugby that Scarlett's obviously suits him. So Munster obviously trying to expand their attacking game plan with Felix Jones, and signing a player of his ilk is going to help with that. And I suppose Billy Holland and John Klein have had all the workload for Munster recently, with Donegan Ryan and Dave Foley and the likes of that moving on. So it's just going to add strength and depth, and obviously a player of massive ability and big physical presence. So an exciting signing for Munster.
Like a ball playing second row as well, like someone who's got good hands as well and joins into attacks and links up, and almost like Muldowney did the year Connacht won the Pro 14 or Pro 12 as well. Like,
yeah, exactly.
So Joe Schmidt was also talking about Byrne this week.
Yeah. He had his minutes counted, how many minutes he'd played this season, 1,350 minutes. And then he was just kind of saying, I think he listed four or five reasons why he didn't have Byrne in a squad, and it was all about that he'd have to let him go back to Scarlets if he had brought him to Spain, that he can't have as much time with him as he'd like. He'll probably cap him during the summer as well, but it was the game time was one of the big things that he went out against. You know, like, so it's just one of the reasons they're not saying that their rule is that if you're foreign based you're not going to get a game, but it is, you know, like, it's, and you have to be pretty spectacular to kind of break that rule, but like Sexton was, but nobody else seems to get a chance. So it's a shame. I would love to see him there. Like, I can see what they're doing with Zeebo, because Zeebo's heading off, but Byrne is coming back, and I actually think he'd be, you know, if we are going to win the Six Nations, he would definitely help us. So I think it's a pain that he's not there, but you know, there are, you know, four or five other lads there. That's what he mentioned. Spain, couldn't get him to Spain, have to give him back to Scarlets. Scarlets are flogging him and a few other reasons as well why you can't pick him.
Yeah. I'm okay with it for the moment. If I've got the next year's World Cup in mind, he's got time. He'll have a full season at Munster. There will be a couple of caps there. It's just that it's unfortunate he couldn't be in camp for longer, just to get a bit more into the Schmidt systems.
Yeah, they'll probably bring him into Carton House then for at least a week or so. Yeah. during the Six Nations as well, probably maybe even in that down week when it's a little bit off and they're doing maybe going off to Buccaneers or something like that, so he'll get in, get a taste of it, and and then it'd be great just to see him getting capped. I'd say if he stays fit, I said he could play 3,000 minutes this year if Scarlets keep going well, but it'd be good to see him play in Australia during the summer.
They'll get their money's worth.
Yeah, they're going to rinse every bit out of him.
They will. Right, next question. Stephen Kavanagh. Does Mike have advice for John Muldoon for making the most of his last season, and how to stash away as much free gear as possible? What's he getting at, Mike?
I didn't know it was my last game when I played against Scarlets. I didn't realise that was my last game. So, you know, for Mull and... Tommy Boswell's retired, hasn't he? So, but for those guys that know they're retiring, and John's fit and healthy at the moment, so he can really enjoy his last few games, and I'm sure he will. On the stash front, you got to get as much as you can, because I've got a few bags. You end up giving so much away, but you keep a few of the good things for a rainy day.
What did you miss out on? Like, if you'd known, what would you have made sure that's going on the
stash wise?
Yeah.
Oh, right. Well, yeah. Seeing pictures of the lads going around in the new flash stash, it's you do feel a bit sad, because that's one of the best days is getting your bag of stash. Whether it be with Leinster or Ireland, that feeling when you unzip the bag and you see all the stash in there, and then you try it on, you rip the plastic off. It's just amazing. Absolutely amazing.
Best stash you got, Tomás?
The Munster gear was pretty nice. The Adidas stuff. Yeah, I wouldn't share the same excitement that Mike has for gear, but when I was 19 or 20, it was nice getting a few bits, but like you said, you get kind of overrun with it. You end up giving a lot of it away to your brothers and your mates and stuff like, I've got plenty of it still.
You know what was really nice was when you arrived in the studio today and Tomás brought free watches for everyone. Oh, sorry, that didn't happen.
Totalandco.com, my website, Tomás O'Leary Designs. If you're looking for a present or just want to treat yourself, go and get a watch.
There you go.
Do you do gift vouchers?
I do for you, Mike. No problem.
Next question. John O'Donovan, who's better at dancing, Mike or Tomás?
I've exhibited my wares on national TV, so look, we can have a look at Mike there now if he wants to throw down a challenge.
The feet started to move under the desk.
Probably Mike.
I need a bit of training, so.
Okay. Yeah. So next year.
Yeah, Mike McCarthy wants to sign up for it.
Okay, done. There you go. They'll keep you active next year now.
Yeah.
Next one. Colm O'Donoghue asks, this is a good one. Would a year in the Challenge Cup be a disaster for Ulster? There's a lot going on with that question.
I don't think it would. Remember when the teams who didn't qualify for knockout stages went into Challenge Cup and Leinster went on to win a Challenge Cup? That was very beneficial for their squad. And
do you mean in terms of actually just winning silverware?
Winning silverware and creating a good feel factor around the club. Harlequins had the same experience, I think, as well. So, obviously, they're going to want to get into the Champions Cup and be challenging at the top level, but it wouldn't be a disaster, I don't think.
Okay, flip side would be player recruitment might be a bit of a challenge if you're bringing in another player trying to.
If they still need to get a couple of big names in or something like that, and it'd be hard to kind of sell them on those kind of big nights, because you're not going to be able to. You'll be having half empty stadiums you're going to play in.
Pay them enough money, they'll come.
All right, that'll do for me.
That. Yeah.
Cash them up.
Last question from Killian Day. This is a long one. With Leinster producing so many players for other provinces currently, should the IRFU explore a national academy that would allow them distribute players to where they are needed? Cost is an obvious issue, as well as players wanting to move, but those problems exist now.
It's an interesting one. A central academy, and then what would you have, a draft or something, or just shoot them where they want?
You're talking about London Irish there, so that seems like a perfect fit for all those players that can't get game time. Is there, if there was kind of a link with
employ London Irish as a fifth province officially?
They're screaming out for players, aren't they? So
the Scots are doing it. We were supposed to be looking into doing with Worcester as well, just having an English-based team as well.
What would you reckon? Do you reckon that if you're from Cork, you would?
I would never want to play with Leinster, Ulster, or Connacht.
And why is that, Tomás? Is it too far from the parish?
Exactly. But when I was in the academy, it was technically an Irish academy, and we used to meet up maybe 3-4 weeks of the year, everyone together. But then we would be put back to our provinces, and we train with the senior team and the senior setup in our province. But I think if you start diluting the provincial academies and you start diluting people's ambition to want to play with their province, and like I said, I think because people genuinely want to play for their local team, that adds so much to it's not tangible, but it adds so much to the provinces. So I think if you dilute that, it would have a massive negative consequence. So and obviously then if a fella doesn't make it within his local academy and there's an opportunity in Ulster or Munster or Connacht, that's brilliant for those provinces. So I don't see an issue with the way the system is working.
Okay, and we know that David Nocivora has said he wants players to be up for moving if that's the thing that would get them game time.
Yeah, it'd be interesting. Like that's the talk now as well. So let's see if your Marsh wish comes true as well, and this could be the beginning of something beautiful over the next few years.
Wow.
Fluid provincial movement.
Okay, right.
FPM, of course.
Okay, last one, and it's not a question that came in, but I'm asking it. Wayne Barnes in the Scarlett's Toulon match did something really interesting. He brought over Ma Nanu, so a very senior, very famous player who'd been asking for penalties and waving yellow cards and whatever, and said, look, let's make it really clear. You come and ask for a yellow card, you get one. Understand? And then Nigel Owens has backed that up publicly, said, yeah, the senior refs have had a chat. I'm loving this.
Mm.
Is this something which you think is crept into the game a bit, Tomas, or is this something which you reckon is just a few high profile cases?
I think it's always been there. I think at the highest level, you know, in the biggest games, you're going to try and get an edge for your teams, and the senior players especially, and those, I suppose, who are have an ability to influence referees, do it. Some of them are obviously a lot better at it and do it maybe more subtly.
We've got a few yappers though in the Ireland squad. There's a few guys who do, even when they're not captain, they do have a bit of a mouth, and you would.
Peter Mahoney got done for one there against Racing, didn't he? Got marched back.
Yeah. So if they're going to be looking at this a little more closely, you hope that there's a word in the ear saying, listen, lads, we don't need
I don't think it's an issue. Like, it hasn't unduly affected an Irish rugby team, has it? Or. I don't think it's an issue, but like,
but you're dead right what you're saying. Of course you're going to try and influence a ref. I mean, I remember when I was playing in the Premiership, and Delalio and Martin Johnson it was actually frustrating to watch how much of an influence they had on the referee. So I it's not as bad as it used to be, but if you can influence the referee, why not? Actually, talking about John Muldoon there, the one where he influenced the referee when they were playing Wasps, was it last year in the Champions Cup, and they kicked to the corner, time was up, and he talked the ref into letting them take the line out, and they end up scoring and winning the game by 2 points. So
that was top work from Mulder.
Top work, yeah.
He invented his own rule book.
Yeah, exactly.
That's good. Okay, we'll leave it there. Thanks to Pat, to Tomas and Mike for joining me in studio, to Alan Lucknan for producing, and Shane Dempsey was on sound. We'll be back next Thursday with a new podcast. Subscribe to it on iTunes, Podcast Republic, SoundCloud, and every good podcast app to get it straight to your phone. This has been The Hard Yards. I'm Andy McGeady. Thank you for listening, and we'll talk to you next week.